93.3 FM. With diverse and sometimes difficult themes and topics, from the silver tsunami and the healthcare crisis to food and water issues, you'll want to stay tuned. Sunday morning, 10 a.m. Conversations worth having.
If you had the opportunity to save a life, would you take it? Sounds like a no-brainer, right? And yet only 31% of people in Ontario have registered their consent to donate their organs and tissue in the event of their death. That means, on average, one person will die every 3 days because an organ is not available to save them. By registering, you have the opportunity to save as many as 8 people's lives through organ donation and to improve the quality of life for up to 75 people through tissue donation. If you want to become a donor, go to beadonor.ca. Take 2 minutes to register your consent to save a life. And don't forget to share your wishes with your family afterwards. In the words of Mike Willis, a very grateful heart recipient,
"If someone hadn't registered their consent to donate, I would not be alive today."
Jeremy Dutcher is an Indigenous performer, composer, activist, and musicologist currently based in Toronto, Ontario. Originally from New Brunswick, Dutcher studied music in Halifax, which prompted them to delve into archive recordings reflecting their Wolastoyovic heritage. After a long period of work, the end result is a powerful stage show and critically adored new album called Wolastoyovic Lintuwaganawa, which has led them to tour the world, including 2018 stops at Guelph's Hillside Festival and Sackville's Sappy Fest. Jeremy and I connected recently to discuss their working history, the past and current state of Indigenous communities across Canada from their perspective, their new album, and much more. This is the 408th episode of Creative Control, featuring Jeremy Dutcher with your host, me, Vish Khanna. Hi, Jeremy. How are you doing?
Hey, I'm very well.
It's nice to speak with you. Where in the world are you today?
Well, I just landed back in Toronto, where I have a place. I was in Montreal last night, and before that in Dawson City, Yukon, and Vancouver. So I've sort of been all over the place these days.
That is an interesting trajectory, really.
Yeah.
Vancouver, Dawson City, that kind of makes sense. It's still pretty, that's far. But then you all the way to Montreal, right across the country. Wow.
That was a long travel day, let me tell you.
But I assume you are happy to travel and spread your music around.
I mean, yeah, it's sort of, it is the line of work I've chosen. and I'm so happy to be doing it, honestly, like to get to go around and to some of these places and connect with the communities there has like been really, really cool. So, yeah.
Is this a recent phenomenon for you? Were you a hard touring musician before the release of your latest record?
Hard touring, no, definitely not. You know, I had done some gigs around Toronto, and then I actually did a bit of a tour in Asia last year, which sort of came out of the blue. And then a little bit in Scandinavia too, you know, just kind of picking up these gigs where they came. But yeah, no, in terms of like the, not constant touring, but you know, just like frequent touring, I'll say. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's been, you know, since the record came out, so. And you know, it's much nicer to do it, I think, once you have something tangible for people, you know, to take away and to build a relationship with, because it was sort of felt weird a little bit touring when I was like, okay, here, well, not weird, but I guess just different, you know. It's like you create a moment in a show and then it's not you can't relive it. But now it's like you can actually gift people with something. And I'm so like happy to share this music. So yeah, it's been cool
now,
since it came out.
I was very fortunate to see you perform at the National Arts Center in Ottawa during the Megafono Festival.
Oh yeah. Cool. I love that show so much with my with a good friend of mine, Melody McIver.
That's right. Yeah, yeah. It was unbelievable. And I had never seen you before. I wasn't that familiar with you at that point. And my friends, in particular, my friend Stephen Lamke was excited to see you. And he provoked me to go. And he runs Sappy Fest in New Brunswick as well. So yeah. in Sackville, New Brunswick. So anyway, that was mind-blowing. And I was struck by your presentation. You were singing. Some would say it was operatic singing, I suppose. And you were playing, you know, kind of you were playing kind of piano in the classical realm. But then you also were augmenting all of this with these recordings. And I think on some level, I don't mean to reduce your practice or forgive me if I am in attempting to capture it, but I'm hoping you can elaborate upon some of these things in terms of your current live presentation, if it's changed since that was back in February of 2018. So I don't know if that was an early show in this swing of things. Can you talk about your show and how it works?
Sure. Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah. It's sort of working in a couple different configurations right now. And that's allowed like me to be super flexible in terms of like the kinds of shows and venues I can do. You know, I just had this experience like a couple weeks ago, and it was actually back at the National Arts Center. I played this like Governor General's Award thing with the NACO. So I did this like massive gig with an orchestra, like doing my music. I was like, holy shit, like this is so cool. Mm-hmm. And then the next weekend, I was in the north end of Winnipeg, playing for the Sagahiwe Festival, which is like an Indigenous arts festival happening sort of in like the divested communities of Winnipeg. And just the juxtaposition of those like two audiences and communities is like so much how this project looks in terms of where it can live. So yeah, I think it's been really interesting to sort of be able to create different spaces and different kinds of live shows. What you saw was like very much sort of the piano reduction version of what I'm hoping to do and what I've been doing. But it's also like, I don't know, I'm quite process oriented. And so in terms of like how I write music, or at least this record anyway, it was very much at the piano. So giving people, you know, and with the archive, of course, as you mentioned. So sort of playing, you know, playing these piano arrangements sort of how I first had intended them, and then playing also the recording to show sort of people where it's all coming from, right? And give people sort of a glimpse into that experience of like what it was like to actually go in the archive. And I think, you know, I'm learning maybe to be a little less narrative focused in my shows, but definitely I like to tell stories all the time because I think...
Well, I thought the banter and that kind of, you know, it's I assumed you had said these things before, but it seemed kind of like extemporaneous explanations of things. I thought that was really helpful and inform things. And to be honest, I think I put you in an awkward position by jumping ahead to the live show instead of talking about the background of what you're up to. And I apologize for that.
No worries.
I was just thinking about the fact I've thought about your show a lot, like since I've seen it. It's the only time I've seen you play live, and I've just thought about it quite a bit. And
cool.
And it really had an impact on me on some level. And so I guess, like I say, just to correct things here, we should actually go back and talk about how this record came to be and how you approached making it, because it's a very... From my understanding of what I've read and heard you or read interviews and things like that, I know it was a very interesting process. And for those who are unfamiliar with it, I actually think we should jump back. So can you talk about how this music came to be and, you know, go back to your studies? In fact, I think it's relevant info.
Yeah, sure. So all the way back. long ago. Yeah, I mean, but it's kind of been this whole album is like a culmination of, you know, at least, you know, 8 or 9 years of work.
And I assume some trial and error as well. Like you, I think,
hugely.
I think you've well, I feel like what I saw was a refined, you know, the process of a refinement in terms
totally.
Of trying to figure out how to do it.
Totally. Yeah, no, absolutely. Doing that like tour in Asia where I had to do like in 1 month, I did like 17 shows. And, you know, you just have to sort of like, you have to be ready to go at the drop of a hat, and you really create a flow in building a show. Sorry, now we're talking about the show again.
No, well, the show is obviously a reflection and representation of this work. Don't get me wrong. Yeah. I feel like I've not had this chronological conundrum with other guests before, and I've been doing this a long time, but my initial, encounter with you was live. So that's what resonates with me. And then the record has come out. It's been celebrated and acclaimed. It's as we're speaking, it's nominated on the long list for the Polaris Music Prize. The critics are on it. And, you know, I know you've been doing lots of press and big press, you know. So, like, there's been a lot of attention paid to it. But we must, for the sake of people who don't know what we're talking about, we must jump back and figure out where this all came from.
It's all about the process, so we gotta delve in. Okay.
Yes.
So, yeah, I mean, this is it all sort of started. Wow, how far do we want to go back? Okay, three generations? No. It's sort of like it started as like a seed that was planted from an elder of mine, actually, named Maggie Paul, and she. She lives back in New Brunswick, where my people come from. Our territory is sort of like runs mostly through like the western part of New Brunswick into Maine and up to Quebec as well.
Who do you represent, so to speak?
Yeah, so our people are called Wolastoqiyik, and that's sort of actually the first word of the album, actually, which is called Wolastoqiyik Lintuwaganawa. And so Wolastoqiyik is talking about it sort of translates to the people of the beautiful river. And that river is the Wolastoq River, which sort of runs down the western part of New Brunswick into the ocean, which is called the St. John River today by some. And yeah, so this elder of mine, she knew I was interested in like our traditional music. I always had, you know, I always wanted to be around the drum, and she was like a great song carrier for our people.
When did your interest in music of any kind begin?
That's the thing, because I was like, hey, how far do you want to go back? Because like,
no, let's go. Let's do it. Let's get to know you a little bit. Sure, why not?
I've been making music since I was a kid, for sure. It was always like my parents, we had this fireplace at home with this ledge on it. And every time somebody would come over, I would like clear it, just take everything, like totally clear it off the ledge and take my little guitar and do a little show for people. you know, I was always like, we're very, very fortunate that we were gifted a piano. So we had a piano in the home too, which was like, I didn't realize at the time, but oh my God, such a gift, you know?
Unusual for someone to have a piano.
Absolutely. Yeah, totally. And you know, my parents couldn't afford it either. It was gifted to us. It was, anyway, it was just, music was always in the home. You know, my brothers, are all musical and sort of show that in many different ways. You know, my oldest brother is part of the local drum group and, is really into traditional songs. And yeah, the brother closest to me is, like a jazz musician back in Fredericton. So, yeah, no, music was always around the home, but when I really started to go down this path was through theater, actually. I was like a bit of a like eccentric weirdo in high school, and so the theater kids, they were my people, and it was a bit of a refuge in a way, you know, being New Brunswick and all. So yeah, I sort of got involved in that, and then through talking with like mentors in that, I said, you know, how, if I wanted to take this to the next sort of step, right? What would I do? And they said, well, have you thought about classical music? And like, not really. I didn't really have much of a relationship, you know, other than like what most people have of like, you know, cartoons and like sort of those like public iterations of the classical canon. But yeah, I didn't really know too much about it. So
what do you suppose spurred them to suggest classical as a sort of a genre signifier for you to explore?
Well, I think, I mean, maybe they saw it in my voice or
of course. Yeah.
I could have been, or I think like also, you know, I was sort of given two paths, right? You know, if they were like, you know, if you want to go to theater school, that's one option. If you want to get like a super solid vocal foundation, and that's, you know, you want to really sing. Sorry, not really sing. That's sounds flippant, but, but if you really want to, you know, get that strong foundation, like going, even if you don't want to be an opera singer, you know, even going through that rigor and doing that kind of training is good. So, yeah, I took them up on it. Okay. So I applied and I went to school in Halifax.
But as a vocalist?
Yeah, as a vocalist.
Okay.
Totally.
Okay.
Totally my focus. I actually didn't even play the piano at that time. It actually came through going to school and just having access to all these pianos, you know, I knew how to play chords, I guess, but in a way of like actually composing at the instrument, it's like, it's a different kettle of fish, I guess.
Yeah, right.
Anyway. So yeah, what I noticed in these like institutional spaces was that music is just kind of done in a different way, and definitely in a different way than I was used to. Right. And so, yeah, there started to be for me like a longing for like the kind of music that was made at home, or like, yeah, just kind of a bit of a struggle of like, you know, it's beautiful music, but it's the kind of spaces and the kind of like competition and the kind of like classism that's like inherent, I think, in like a lot of these spaces is really tough. So just trying to find a pathway through that. I really wanted to bring some of myself and some of my home to what I was doing. So, you know, I sort of looked through the sort of what is considered canon in like classical music for like things of indigenous content, you know, if there were composers like talking about it, or if there were actually like indigenous composers or what. I just started doing like research and digging into it.
Yeah.
And I found these like these set of four songs by this guy named Charles Wakefield Cadman, and he was like a turn of the century American like composer and non-indigenous, and he took these like melodies and sort of made these like songs around them, and I was like, oh, huh. But they're all sort of like kind of cheesy and like
he's non-indigenous, but he discovered these indigenous musical pieces and then tried to adapt them? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, exactly. And so there was actually a group of composers, and again, I'm very research-based, and so I went in and started digging into these composers and who they were. So they're called the Indianist composers, and you know, what they did were they just like non-indigenous people at the turn of the century, sort of like early 1900s, and there was also this boom in ethnomusicology where folks would go into these like communities with, you know, and this is at the when recording technology was also really getting going as well, so they would go into these communities and start recording, you know, and so all
field,
of a sudden
field, recording, this, field recordings and whatnot.
Exactly. So there was this massive explosion of like access to musics not of, you know, a Western classical canon. And so these groups of composers would like latch on to like certain ones. And so he wrote these pieces and I learned them and I performed them, and they're kind of like funny and, you know, for an actual indigenous person to perform them, a little ironic, but you know, it's like, I have this, you know, Buffy St. Marie, you know, I have this like profound love for this woman. And, she always says, if you don't like what's on the menu, you got to go into the kitchen, you got to cook it up and show them how good it tastes. You know, and I thought this was like, when I heard her say this, I was like, oh, that's kind of perfect. And that's kind of like what I want to do with this project, is because, you know, when I was singing those songs by this white guy who didn't really have a connection to the community, or like, you know, was just sort of taking the melodies and totally decontextualizing them, you know, I saw that and I was like, oh, I could do better than that. You know, I come from this link, from this community. So this was, you know, this was before the archive. I didn't know anything about that. This was just really just me trying to figure out my identity in school and like how I could mix who I was into what I was doing.
I want to ask you about your relationship to these kinds of archival field recordings, because on the one hand, I gather for you that they proved to be a treasure trove in terms of connecting to your heritage.